Speaking on this program is Brother Winford Claiborne.
Thank you and good morning. Winston-Salem, North Carolina, is one of my favorite cities in the United States, and has been since I began to preach in gospel meetings there in the late 1950s. I have thoroughly enjoyed my many visits to Winston-Salem, and have many friends in that city. When I saw the name Winston-Salem in a recent issue of the Joplin, Missouri newspaper, the Joplin Globe, I was immediately attracted to the article in the paper. The title of the article was, "Jurors Reject Plea for Death Penalty." I want to review some of the facts from the Joplin paper. A man who had been drinking and using other drugs killed two college students with his car. The two young people who were killed were students at Wake Forest University at Winston-Salem. If this accident were an unusual occurrence, it would be cause for grief and pain. But it happens many times daily in the United States. In fact, approximately 80 people die every day because someone cared so little about other people's safety and lives that they would not refrain from drinking and driving. Alcohol means more to such people than the lives of their fellow human beings and even their own lives. Can you believe we would be so callous and hard-hearted? Do you suppose drunk drivers have ever heard of the golden rule which says, "Therefore all things whatsoever you would that men should do unto you, do you even so to them? For this is the law and the prophets." Matthew 7:12. When the prosecution and the defense arrested in the drunk driving case in Winston-Salem, the jury deliberated 70 minutes before pronouncing two life sentences on the man. The prosecutors had sought the death penalty, but the jury rejected the prosecutor's plea. The prosecutor commented, "Driving while impaired, reckless driving, cuts across all social lines, and you have very responsible people from all walks of life who go to bars and drink after work. This verdict will seriously make everyone stop after the first drink or the second one." Page 1A. My friends, the prosecutor was dreaming. If he thinks drinkers generally are going to take responsibility for their behavior, some drinkers may quit after one or two drinks, but some will drink 8 or 10 and get dog drunk and then drive on the highways of our nation. Beverage alcohol and good judgment just do not mix well. Shakespeare once said, "Men put into their mouths that which takes away their brains." The Bible and human experience support Shakespeare's observation. Incidentally, the state of North Carolina can bring felonious charges of first-degree murder, punishable by death, against a drunk driver who kills, whether or not the death was intentional. Every state in the Union should adopt the same law. It would not stop drunk driving, but it might reduce the deaths from drunk driving. Those who choose to drink and drive on America's highways must be held responsible for their behavior. We cannot allow crooked lawyers to plead innocence on account of the persons being drunk. Lawyers ought to be held accountable for their behavior in court. The defense attorney in the North Carolina case blamed alcohol and drugs for his client's troubles. Obviously, alcohol and other drugs were involved, but they did not by themselves create the problems the man faced. He made a choice to use alcohol and other drugs. Nobody forced him to take these mind-altering, body-destroying substances. Well, I know that both alcohol and other drugs are addictive, but we choose to begin to use these drugs, and alcohol is a drug, and we must be held accountable for what occurs when we use them. Alcohol and other drugs have never made anyone take them. Human beings decide what they are going to do with respect to these and then have to pay the consequences when they use them. It is wrong when a lawyer attempts to blame alcohol and other drugs for dangerous behavior. An honorable lawyer will not stoop that low. The drunk driver in North Carolina blamed the government for his drinking and driving. While he was serving in the military, he apparently had some severe physical problems, although these problems are not mentioned. He claimed that the Army made his condition worse by providing him with drugs and never telling him he should not drink while he was taking his painkillers. Tragically, there are physicians, both in the Army and on the outside, who prescribe too many drugs to their patients. Doctors are often guilty of making drug addicts of their patients. I know doctors who will give their patients just about any drug the patient requests. That, my friends, is a dangerous and sometimes deadly practice. Before the North Carolina accident, which killed two college students, the driver had taken drugs and had drunk 2 quarts of beer. Then he went to 2 bars and drank more beer. My friends, do you know that the alcohol in beer is the same as the alcohol in vodka or in whiskey or in any other alcoholic beverage? It just takes greater volume for a man to get drunk on beer or wine coolers or on wine than on whiskey. Even if the whiskey is made from some of the purest spring water in the state of Tennessee. Alcohol, regardless of its source, makes men drunk and kills innocent victims on our highways. My friends, I have a very serious question to ask every person in my audience today. Who is responsible for the drunk driver's killing 2 Wake Forest University students? Oh, I know the driver was responsible. But does anyone else bear some of the responsibility for these tragic deaths? Please understand that I am not attempting to shift blame from anyone who drinks and drives. If men and women drink regularly and excessively over a period of time, chances are they are going to be involved in automobile accidents, sometimes fatal accidents. The drunk driver must never be able to plead innocence because of his drinking. Nobody made the drinker take into his body that which adversely affects his mind and hence his ability to react quickly enough to avoid an accident. The Joplin paper reported that the lawyer for the drunk driver in North Carolina foolishly claimed Satan forced him to do it. Beelzebub, alcohol. In every bottle of liquor, the devil lurks. In these pain pills he was taking, the devil lurks. Page 1A. A lawyer who would make such senseless arguments in a court of law ought to be disbarred from the legal profession and prosecuted for moral turpitude. Do lawyers who get charges of driving under the influence dismissed have any blame for the great number of drunks who drive and kill? The answer to that question comes from a rather unusual source, an inmate in one of the state penitentiaries in Tennessee. The letter that I'm about to read shows that lawyers who get their clients' charges of drunk driving dismissed are not only contributing to deaths from drunk driving on the nation's highways, they're also contributing to the unhappiness and misery of the drunks themselves. Will you please listen to this letter, which appeared in the Elk Valley Times, Fayetteville, Tennessee, May the 14th, 1997. Please listen and weep for the great damage our legal system is doing to so many lives. The letter to the editor has the title, Prison Inmate Seeks Community Forgiveness. I would like to take this opportunity to express my sincere remorse and apologies to the citizens of my home community, Lincoln County, Tennessee. During the period of time between 1988 and 1995, I was arrested for DUI in Lincoln County 7 times. Following each arrest, with the help of a good lawyer, my DUI charges were either dismissed or reduced to first offense. I never served more than 48 hours in the Lincoln County Jail for any of these DUI offenses. All this time, I thought I was getting away with something. But I was actually digging myself in deeper. You see, my alcoholism led to further misadventures, which landed me where I am today, in a Tennessee state prison. In 1995, while very much under the influence of alcohol, I caused some very serious damages to three businesses in the Park City area. Lincoln Utilities Contractors, Park City Tire, and Palatec. My random acts of criminal behavior against these innocent victims caused them a great deal of turmoil and expense. The people most affected by my infamous deeds are now my ex-wife and my two young daughters, ages 6 and 2. The problems and embarrassment my actions has caused them go far beyond comprehension. Although at times it is quite difficult to bear, my incarceration has in many ways been a blessing to me. It has given me time to take a long, hard look at myself and make some very much needed changes in my life, both mentally and spiritually. The changes I've made have quite possibly prevented the premature death of myself and others. To all those who have unknowingly had their lives in danger while I was drunk and behind the wheel, please forgive me. To the business owners, their employees, and their patrons who had their businesses, jobs, financial security, and services seriously interrupted as a result of my crimes, please forgive me. And to my ex-wife and to my two darling daughters who may never completely recover from the emotional scarring, although it is far from being enough, I am truly sorry, and I beg your forgiveness. I wanted to write a letter of this nature for quite some time. My delay in doing so was because I did not want the victims of my crimes, nor the parole board, to think my motive in doing so was to gain approval toward release. Let me assure everyone that this is not the case. On April the 11th, 1997, the parole board denied my release. My motive in seeking the forgiveness of those mentioned comes from my sincere, heartfelt remorse and out of direct obedience to God's word. Finally, to all those who have believed in my potential and support my family and me, thank you. Page 4A. Do I have to tell you what great tragedies occur when men and women, boys and girls, drink alcoholic beverages? And when lawyers and judges conspire to let drunks go free? When those drunks have caused great damage and even killed people? Our laws regulating drunk driving must be enforced. It is an absolute disgrace when they are not. But our lawyers, judges, and other law enforcement officials, the only ones who bear responsibility for death and property damage resulting from drinking and from drunk drivers, do parents have an obligation to teach their children about the devastating effects of drinking and not just drunk driving? If parents are interested in their children's welfare, morally, spiritually, and physically, they should inform their children of alcohol's debilitating effects on moral decisions and on behavior. Human beings under the influence of beverage alcohol often rape and murder and steal. Normally, they would not engage in such behavior. But alcohol deadens their consciences and causes them to behave in ways which would be abhorrent to them if they were sober. Alcohol and spirituality do not go together. They are natural enemies. And anyone who has taken time to do any reading knows what alcohol does eventually to the human body. It particularly affects the brain, which every physician and physiologist knows. If they do not know, they need to do their homework a little better. What part of the responsibility for the North Carolina accident do the political leaders in that state have for the deaths of those college students? Did they imagine they could legalize beverage alcohol and not have increased deaths on the highways of North Carolina? Why were the arguments about tax revenue from the sale of alcoholic beverages? Even if the argument were logical, and it most certainly is not, does the tax revenue outweigh the lives of those two college students and the dozens of others who are killed on North Carolina's highways? Is human life so worthless that a few dollars revenue from alcoholic beverages are worth more than those lives? But the supporters of legalizing beverage alcohol say, people are going to drink anyway. So why not allow the state to collect taxes from the sale of strong drink? Have you ever thought seriously about the stupidity of such an argument? Why not say, as some in our society are arguing, that prostitution will never be eradicated? So why not tax prostitution? Or men and women are going to steal. Why not put a tax on all the property that is stolen? The tax revenue argument is absolutely senseless. Besides, does not the legalizing of any product or service give the impression that it is moral? When abortion was made legal, millions of America's young people got the impression that it was and is moral. Incidentally, why do we not tax those having abortions? That would raise hundreds of millions of dollars for the states and for the federal government. My greatest disappointment always in fighting against the sale of beverage alcohol is the lackadaisical attitude on the part of preachers and of churches. Knowing North Carolina as I do, after having held many meetings in that state, I am positive that many churches and preachers oppose the legalization of beverage alcohol. But there were almost certainly hundreds of preachers who either did not oppose the sale of strong drink, or they did not have the courage to speak out against it. There are liberal preachers and churches which do not want to take a stand on any moral issue, unless it harmonizes with their liberal agenda. Some of them are afraid they will be characterized as being fundamentalists. What a horrible thing for theological liberals. It would be better to be called a serpent than to be called a fundamentalist. But there are millions of Americans who are not fundamentalists and yet oppose the sale and the drinking of beverage alcohol. I am not a fundamentalist, although I subscribe to many of the same truths the fundamentalists believe. But I am an ardent enemy of beverage alcohol. Why am I so strongly opposed to it? My friends, I have seen what it does to families. Hundreds of thousands of families in this nation have experienced violence, deprivation, division, and other evils because someone in the family drinks. Girls and boys often have to endure the sexual advances of a parent because the parent drinks. The children are often embarrassed because the father or mother gets drunk and behaves like an idiot. Sometimes the children just want to go away and hide because of a drunken parent. Did the preachers in North Carolina lack knowledge about the adverse effects of beverage alcohol? If they did not know about the damage alcohol does to homes, to individuals, and to the nation, or if they did not know what the scriptures teach about strong drink, they should be ashamed of themselves. Solomon wrote almost 3,000 years ago, "Wine is a mocker. Strong drink is raging, and whosoever is deceived thereby is not wise." Proverbs 20:1. Has the human race learned anything which would prove Solomon's statements to be false? The truth is, we know much more about the effects of alcohol than Solomon's generation knew. But tragically, alcohol still causes many kinds of heartaches. It still disrupts homes. It still destroys men's souls. You and I may not be able at this time to prevent the sale of alcoholic beverages, but we can teach our people, both old and young, about the tragedies which accompany the sale and the drinking of whiskey, beer, wine, and other mind-altering drugs. Let us strive to put the liquor manufacturers out of business. Just in case you think I am overly excited about the damage beverage alcohol does to our nation, let me read to you an article by Rolf Ruffner of Chillicothe, Texas. Ruffner's article appeared in the December 1996, January 1997 issue of World Vision magazine and includes these statistics on the global epidemic of alcoholism. If you can listen to these statistics and not be challenged to oppose the evils of strong drink, I'm deeply troubled about your moral and spiritual values. Please listen carefully. The United States spends $58 billion a year on alcohol-related problems. In the United States alone, someone is killed by a drunk driver every 24 minutes. My friends, how do you square these facts with the amount of tax revenue various cities and states are supposed to gain from the sale of alcoholic beverages? France has one of the highest rates of cirrhosis of the liver in the world. This country, the United States, is also one of the largest consumers of wine, an acceptable alcoholic beverage to many. Do you think the man or woman who has cirrhosis of the liver, or who has lost a loved one to a drunk driver, has much faith in the tax revenue argument? What would a person give in exchange for his cirrhosis of the liver? If he could only go back to the beginning of his drinking days and know what he knows today, his defense of drinking would sound pretty hollow. In Canada, 9 of 10 violent crimes are committed under the influence of alcohol or of illegal drugs. And more than half of all deaths among Native American Canadians are alcohol-related. But I have a right to drink. Alcohol is legal in Canada and in most jurisdictions in the United States. True, alcohol is legal in many states and nations. But when alcohol leads to crime and to murder on our nation's highways, does the fact that alcohol is legal ameliorate the hurt and the tragedy associated with drinking? Russians are now the leading consumers of alcohol in the world. They drink an average of 15.3 quarts of pure alcohol per year. 4.75 quarts constitute a health risk. Will Russians ever overcome the disastrous effects of drinking? Can any nation which consumes so much liquor ever rise to become a leader among nations? Has not France's devotion to strong drink led to that nation's becoming a third-rate country? It is estimated that 80% of Lithuanians are alcohol-dependent. The United States, so far, has not stooped to that depth of degradation, but we are on the way. The amount of alcohol consumed in this nation is a disgrace and brings in its wake suffering, deprivation, and death. And yet we have millions of people, many of whom are religious, who will try to defend the sale of alcoholic beverages. When are we ever going to learn? 10% of drinkers consume an estimated 60 to 70% of all alcohol. Without problem drinkers, the profits of the alcohol industry would plummet. Without social drinking by people who call themselves Christians, it would probably disappear. When liquor manufacturers, distributors, and retail outlets pretend to be concerned about problem drinkers, you can rest assured they are shedding crocodile tears. If drunks and alcoholics were suddenly removed from the earth, the alcohol industry would suffer a crippling blow. They talk a good game about liquor control, but you can depend on their not telling the truth. In countries where alcohol is legal, but advertising is not, drinking rates stand 30% lower. In Chile, 70% of job absenteeism is alcohol-related. I do not know what the rates are here in the United States, but I know they are high, particularly on Mondays. And what absolute stupidity that a man or a woman would threaten the family's financial stability for a bottle of whiskey or for other alcoholic beverages. In South Africa, 1 in 3 urban males is addicted to alcohol. In Botswana, 30% of rural households and 50% of urban households produce alcohol for income. In East Africa, mothers routinely pay children's school fees from the sale of homebrew. In Papua New Guinea, more than 85% of all fatal road accidents involve drivers or pedestrians who are drunk. After providing these eye-opening statistics, Ralph Wagner comments, "When you consider the ravages ethyl alcohol inflicts on society and individuals, I personally see only two uses for the chemical. First, as a disinfectant, but not as good as isopropyl or rubbing alcohol. And, second, as a preservative for biological specimens in the laboratories. Everyone should see what the physical effects of cirrhosis of the liver look like. Would not everyone in the world be happier holier, and more productive if they religiously avoided every form of beverage alcohol. May God in His infinite wisdom and mercy help us to do so. My friends, we thank you for listening to our discussion. If you have questions or comments, you are invited to get in touch with me. Thank you, and may God richly bless you.